through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Happy Friday. It is Jake and Stacy. Curtis Rogers on the board. We have a ton of stuff coming up for you for a Friday show. First of all, we have three chances at the bottom of the hour to enter into the Open the Gates contest giveaway. Tickets for opening day for the Mariners are sold out, so this is your chance not just to get a pair of those tickets, but also to open the gates and let fans back into T-Mobile Park. Your chance again coming up at the bottom of the hour every hour, and you'll have more chances with Wyman and Bob, so you want to listen all day long. We also have some awesome guests today. Mike Salk joining us at 11:30, just like he does every day. We got Michael Bumpus in at noon, and Titus and Tate coming up at 1 p.m. to give us their Sweet 16 preview and tell us everything we need to know about the Zags. Before we get to any of that, though, we got to talk about the latest shuffle along the Seahawks defensive line. You brought back one impact player, and you'll see the departure of another, Jake.
Come on, Stacy, say it.
Carlos Dunlap has reportedly re-signed with the Seattle Seahawks on a two-year deal, I think worth up to $16 million. Essentially, though, you cut out a couple million from what was his $14.5 million cap hit. So John Schneider's gamble paid off. He released Carlos Dunlap.
Sure did.
Later, the team has re-signed him, saving a couple million and getting an impact pass rusher back.
I am feeling good on a Friday, Stacy. I'm so pumped that Carlos Dunlap is back. The Seahawks finally head into training camp with their pass rush solidified. And it's solidified before we even hit April. I mean, this is great. Great news. This move makes the Seahawks pass rush depth now, Stacy, easily the best it's been since 2013. Dunlap is the catalyst to make this all come together. We saw this last year. His impact and what he was able to do in the second half of the season, Dunlap takes the pressure off of Benson Mayoa and Kerry Hyder and the rest of the young group of pass rushers. It allows everyone to play in the roles that best suit them at this time. This has a chance to be really, really fun. Stacy, can you feel it? Can you feel Dunlap, Hyder, Mayoa, Daryl Taylor, Jamal Adams harassing quarterbacks in Lumen Field with the crowd going absolutely wild? Because I can, and it's giving me goosebumps. Like, I am thrilled about this signing of Dunlap because, as I mentioned just a second ago, it allows Benson Mayoa to not have to play over 50 to 60% of the snaps. Where he is at his best is with a rotational pass rush. Kerry Hyder, it's great that he was able to step up to the plate as a frontline guy this last year, but that's not necessarily who he has been his entire career, Stacy. Now he doesn't have the pressure on him when it comes to opposing defense or opposing offenses, game planning, and trying to limit Kerry Hyder. They have to worry about Carlos Dunlap, and it gives Hyder opportunities to get more one-on-one matchups. It allows Daryl Taylor to stay fresh and not have a ton of expectations for himself as a rookie to play more snaps than normal. He can come in and work as a basically his rookie year, his second year in the league, coming off of injury, and be a fresh rotational pass rusher that can cause havoc. LJ Collier gets a chance to grow in the right circumstances. And so you go through that list, and as I said before, this easily is the best pass rushing depth that they've had in quite some time.
And you do also have a departure. Before I get to that, let's get back into the reunion between Carlos Dunlap. So in cut number two, granted, Dunlap did say he wanted to stay in Seattle.
I love to stay in Seattle as long as they'll have me. You know, it was very clear of what I was coming here to do and what my time span would be. So, you know, now it's a conversation, and I'm open and welcoming for it. You guys already know how grateful I am to be here. They've taken great care. I think it's a great organization for vets. Although, you know, I feel, you know, young and fresh like a young player as well. I feel like I got a lot of ball left, and, you know, I would like to finish it up with an organization like this.
Now, that was at the close of the season, and I think that everyone looked at Carlos Dunlap at that time, despite his monumental impact for the Seahawks in just, I think, five starts and more appearances than that, but five, essentially five starts, had five sacks, a fantastic second half of the season, was, in addition to a healthy Jamal Adams, the catalyst for the turnaround for the Seahawks defensive line, ended with 46 sacks as a defense a year after finishing with just 28, which was at the bottom of the league. It was monumental. He was a huge impact. And you look at Carlos Dunlap, and it's hard to separate that turnaround from the addition of that veteran edge rusher. Although, everyone always knew he might be a casualty.
Yeah, there you go.
Because he was 32 years old and had a cap hit of over $14 million.
Right.
I mean, that's tough.
Yes.
So, one of my three takeaways, credit John Schneider for his gamble. John Schneider made the decision to release Carlos Dunlap in the hopes, I would imagine, that he could re-sign him to a cheaper deal. When he released Dunlap, I thought, Jake, this is a big mistake. This is huge. This is bad news, Bears. I know you've got a 32-year-old guy, but he was one of your big impact players, and I'm worried about who you have on the edge before you bring him back. You don't have Benson Mayoa. Now you don't have Carlos Dunlap. Well, 2 weeks later, and they don't just have Dunlap back, but they also re-signed Benson Mayoa and added Kerry Hyder. And so here we go, looking at a very revamped pass rush, and props to John Schneider, that's my first takeaway, for making that gamble, having it pay off, and saving this team a couple million dollars.
It is huge, and I couldn't be happier to be wrong about a particular subject, right? I told you that if Dunlap was to go on the open market, and I was adamant about them needing to work out an extension because I was afraid of Dunlap hitting the open market and him not being available to the Seattle Seahawks. Given a normal year, his cap number or his contract number would have been bigger than what the Seahawks would have wanted to get. But in this unique year, you see that the Seahawks played this one out perfectly. And John Schneider and his plan in terms of what he wanted to do with Carlos Dunlap, it worked out very, very well. And one of the big reasons why, Stacey, I felt that way was also J.J. Watt's contract. Similar age. Dunlap was actually more productive, more consistently productive than J.J. Watt over the last 4 years in particular. And J.J. gets a massive deal with the Arizona Cardinals that I think Dunlap very easily should have gotten if you're talking about, you know, comps and comparables and all that. But as soon as the initial wave of free agency unfolded, I had multiple league sources telling me that Dunlap's market was going to be extremely weak. And so weak, in fact, that it was very likely and easy for the Seahawks to get him and have him return. And I was fired up to see that the Seahawks were able to make that come together. And that's why when they made the addition of Benson Mayoa, they made the addition of Kerry Hyder Jr., people were wondering, oh, does that shut the door on Carlos Dunlap? And I was cautioning everybody, hey, look, this does not signify that Dunlap is not going to be here. These are moves in addition to, and that's why I'm so fired up about this. That's why I love the depth that they have with their pass rushing unit right now, because Dunlap, on top of this, is the proven pass rusher, is the number one guy, the frontline guy that can bring this thing altogether, and it's a very different approach than what they've done over the past two seasons, Stacey, where they would go into the year with a Benson Mayoa and a Kerry Hyder Jr. counting on those guys as being your frontline pass rushers, and that's what they did with Mayoa and Bruce Irvin a year ago. And I think that they are finally, they turned the corner on that and said, look, we need to add, we need to continue to have this pass rushing depth, and we're not just solely going to rely on our developmental program, that LJ Collier and Rasheem Green and Daryl Taylor, they're going to rise to the occasion. I think you got to go for the more sure thing right now, and that's what Carlos Dunlap is.
See, I do want to touch on that, though, because I want to say one more thing before we move to the Jaron Reed news, which is I want the developmental program to work out. Like, they have taken three defensive ends since they traded Frank Clark. In the first round, you took LJ Collier. That was in 2019. And then in 2020, you took two defensive ends. You took Daryl Taylor in the second round. You almost took him in the first round. And then you took Alton Robinson in the fifth round. Now, those are three guys who haven't reached that level yet. And it's premature to say that in some cases. And in the case of LJ Collier, it's a little unfair because he's more of a five tech than he is like a Leo edge rusher, right? So if you take Collier out of it, even though he's a first rounder, different kind of edge rusher, Then you look at Daryl Taylor, and I think, like, look, Carlos Dunlap buys you time. Kerry Hyder buys you time. Kerry Hyder signed a three-year deal. I mean, these are guys that you're kind of hoping will be here next year, particularly Hyder, and can and should be making a big impact for you this year. They're great additions, especially when you saved money on one of them. It's fantastic. I think they're great moves for Seattle. I want the developmental program to work out, too, because another key to building a championship team is having your draft picks pay off.
Mm-hmm.
So even, I don't want to say better, but even better than Kerry Hyder leading the team in sacks or Carlos Dunlap leading the team in sacks would be a breakout season from Daryl Taylor. Because for the last, let's say, 2-3 years, the Seahawks have entered every offseason thinking, what's the pass rush going to look like? They brought in Clowney and Ansah. It didn't pay off. The next year, they traded for Jamal Adams, traded for Carlos Dunlap, and it did pay off. And that was great. But you're kind of hoping that you can get some of your homegrown talent in there because, and this is the most important part of it, it's not just because you drafted them. It's because they're cheaper and they're playing on rookie deals and you know you're going to have them for another couple years.
Right. And that part of the equation is important, but I'm not as concerned about it right now. I'm not as concerned that they are going to be thrust in a position, Stacey, where they are not equipped for it. I don't believe that LJ Collier is equipped to be a frontline starter. I don't believe that Daryl Taylor is equipped to be a frontline starter or to be a 80% to 60% level player this season. Now this takes pressure off of them where they can continue to grow, continue to develop, continue to keep getting better and get opportunities, but they've got a group of guys where they can remain fresh. And one of the things that I think Seahawks fans will love to see again is they'll love to see that. You remember the NASCAR package that they used to have back in 2013 in particular? They tried to do it a little bit in 2014, but you had Chris Clemens, you had Cliff Averill, you had Michael Bennett on the field, and you were able to use this specific skill set of pass rushers on obvious pass rushing downs and totally get after the quarterback and abuse the quarterback. And now they're going to have a group that I believe can do that. You're going to have Carlos Dunlap, Benson Mayowa, Kerry Hyder, LJ Collier could maybe be that guy. Puna Ford could maybe be that guy. But now you've got a group of pass rushing specialists that can really get after the quarterback. And let's not forget Alton Robinson, 4 sacks last year as a rookie. That was the second highest sack total of any rookie defensive end in the NFL.
It's actually more than Frank Clark had his rookie year. So props to Alton Robinson.
It is, and it's encouraging. So that to me is why it's exciting. But the other side of this too is the unfortunate news that Jaron Reed is likely to head out of Seattle. Now, it's to be determined, but we got some crazy news yesterday on top of that. On the Carlos Dunlap deal, Jaron Reed actually came first, finding out that the team tried to approach Jaron Reed about a conversion of his contract and trying to, you know, move some money around, and Jaron Reed told them no, and it broke down so bad that he wants out of Seattle.
Let's jump into that news. So going to the Jaron Reed story, this was reported by Ian Rappaport just ahead, like about 2 hours before the Carlos Dunlap news. He started out by saying, the Seahawks are moving on from starting DT Jaron Reed. By the way, Jaron Reed, who everyone kind of thought, like, if they add Hyder, if they bring in someone else, do you have to look at restructuring Reed? He was always going to be a prime candidate for a restructure. I don't think people were expecting him to randomly tweet, see you 12s, it's been great. So Ian Rappaport said the Seahawks then will have to go depart with Reed either in a release or trade. Reed had wanted a long-term deal, but the team hoped for just a conversion for cap space. Talks broke down, and here we are, he added. Usually cap conversions for space are easy, but Jaron Reed wanted a long-term commitment instead. When Seattle wouldn't give it, the situation went to a bad spot. Now parting ways. So what I wonder is whether Seattle is going to recoup any draft value. They're in need of more picks. They have 3 picks. And like Mike Salk, I'm not really expecting John Schneider to stay with 3 picks in the draft. I think it would be the fewest since the Jets in 2009 or something for about 10 plus years ago. I think it would be the fewest draft picks. Now, you could get something in theory for Jaron Reed. I mean, he's young. He's a great player, but he carries a pretty big contract that if the Seahawks felt like they would need to restructure, chances are another team probably is also going to be hesitant to bring it on. And they would need to take some of that if they traded for him. So
right.
There's a chance that he walks, the Seahawks get nothing, mm-hmm. and then another team signs him for less.
Yeah, this would be truly unfortunate. Like, this would be a big-time bummer. And a trade would be the only would be the only positive in a bad situation. Trading Jaron Reed is not a good situation for the Seahawks. Now, I'm not going to be a hypocrite here because you guys asked me the question, would I take Carlos Dunlap over Jaron Reed? I said yes all day, every day, because Carlos Dunlap makes everybody better across the defensive line. Jaron Reed needs additions too. We saw that in 2019. He needed when he was on his own, or even just with Jadeveon Clowney, he was not the same player, not as effective. When he had a guy like Frank Clark and he had Carlos Dunlap, he could be wildly effective in the interior. But losing Jaron Reed isn't just a nothing burger. It isn't just like, we'll be fine without him. It's no big deal. I mean, he was a very good interior defensive lineman who could get it done in the run game and also could be disruptive from the interior in your pass rush. So it's going to be tough to replace him, but I do think that Puna Ford, a guy who did pay and elected to pay on an easier deal this offseason, has the ability to step up into that three technique role and replace Jaron Reed, and you can find quality depth at defensive tackle. It's a lot easier to find quality depth and depth players at defensive tackle than it is to find a number one pass rusher in the NFL. And so how this has transpired, if it was going to be the decision of Dunlap over Jaron Reed, Dunlap is the right choice. But the thing that is frustrating is that it didn't need to be this way. You could have kept both. And I think that that's the key of it, or that's the bummer to me, that they weren't able to work out, figure a way out to keep the band together, so to speak.
We'll get back to this at 1:30 with Mike Salk. Before we do, it is time for Three Questions, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Pair of big draft pick trades this morning, both involving the Dolphins and one involving the 49ers, where they're now up to number three in this year's draft. So which quarterback available at pick number three would worry you the most if the 49ers were to draft them?
Zach Wilson, hands down, not even close. If Kyle Shanahan got his hands on Zach Wilson, I would not like that whatsoever. Right now, Zach Wilson, to me, in this draft, is a guy that he can make all the throws. He's athletic. And if you give him a true, friendly quarterback ecosystem that Kyle Shanahan has, and can help him with the mental process of making that transition, I think you've got a really, really good quarterback on your hands. Big fan of Zach Wilson out of BYU. But Trey Lance is the next guy that I would be fearful of, and he's the guy that I think is most likely to land to the San Francisco 49ers. I think Zach Wilson gets taken at the second pick with the New York Jets, but Trey Lance is another guy that I would be fearful of. Am I going to be fearful of him in his rookie year? No. Every rookie quarterback goes through their transition, and I think the 49ers could be good. I don't think they're going to be great if Trey Lance is their starting quarterback, but I do think over the next 3 years, with Trey Lance on his rookie deal, I think that's a different story.
Yeah, Zach Wilson, I think, a solid choice for adding to that fear factor a little bit for the 49ers. And if you want to add fuel to the fire, 49ers GM John Lynch, guess where he was spotted, Jake? BYU's pro day.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. Next question.
Yep. Number two.
College basketball starts again tomorrow with the Sweet 16, and at most, the Pac-12 can advance three teams to the Elite Eight. So will their magic continue, or will it run out?
I'm going to say it's going to continue. I think it's going to continue. The magic of the Pac-12, this is a weird year, man. This is a very, very weird year. So I think that there's as good of any for them to get into the Elite Eight. I'm rooting for Oregon State. Oregon State all the way.
Well, you're going to have minimum one because you've got two facing off against each other. I mean, do you see Oregon State being the one that advances over anyone else?
I think Loyola Oregon's Chicago. Probably,
yeah, but then you got Sister Jean. I know Kyle would like to hear or hate me saying that, but
he's the biggest Oregon State fan this weekend.
This absolutely. I think Oregon's probably the best out of all of them, the one I see advancing the furthest. Yeah, I think it's possible. I definitely think it's possible. We'll talk to, when Titus and Tate join us later on at 1, I can't wait to talk to them about the Pac-12 because they were heated about that Pac-12 disrespect.
Number 3.
We're about, what, a couple weeks into free agency? Going into week 3 next week. At this point in free agency, what letter grade would you give the Seahawks?
Letter grade would I give the Seahawks? I mean, you've got to give them close to, I would say, a B+ at least. I mean, they've done pretty well. The Jaren Reed situation, I think, let me change that. I would say a B. Jaren Reed situation knocks that down. That, to me, if you were able to keep Jaren Reed, puts you in a better spot. I would have loved to have seen them add a center rather than Ethan Posick. But overall, I think they've done a very good job in free agency at this point. I'd give them a very, very solid B, with Jaren Reed being the one that brings down that grade a little bit for me.
I'm going to actually be really generous. I'm going to give them an A, like an A- a
really?
Little bit. You have to consider what they're working with, too. It's not like they entered free agency. Last year, they entered with a ton of money, and then they spent a lot of it on Jaren Reed and Greg Olsen. This year, they entered with very little money, 4 picks, and they ended up with a brand new starting left guard, a brand new starting tight end. They ended up bringing back a running back for cheaper than everyone thought that they would bring him back for. So they got their starting running back. They brought back Benson Mayoa. They brought back Carlos Dunlap for cheaper, and they brought in Kerry Hyder. I mean, and then think about the moves they didn't make. They didn't overspend for Shaquille Griffin. Like, they clearly felt like, you know what, it's not worth it for us to really push into our salary cap. We're going to take a shot here and bring in Akella Witherspoon and hope that our great safety tandem can make up for any weaknesses there at cornerback. I mean, I'm looking at it, thinking like with what they had to spend, it was like, you know, those home remodel shows where they're like, your budget's $500, and then you see what they do to a room and you're like, okay, Joanna Gaines, I saw what you did. John Joanna Gaines Schneider, I see you making moves in free agency. 4 people got that joke.
No, I think a lot of people
think he's more Chip Gaines.
Yeah, he's definitely a Chip Gaines.
I feel like Pete is definitely Chip 1,000%, and you can't tell me
what?
Otherwise. Yes.
Pete is?
Listen to me right now.
Chip type A personality.
I don't know, but John's got a very Chip-like personality jokes. And
look,
I could easily see John Schneider play Chip Gaines in a cameo.
I have seen John Schneider at training camp in destroyed denim and flip-flops. He definitely has a Chip Gaines personality, but he's also got the architect type, the vision type that Joanna has. I'm giving him the Joanna Gaines label right now.
Okay.
And then Chip is a little weird. He's a little out the box. I'm going to go ahead and assign him to Pete Carroll. Chip is the one that's going to put in kind of the physical work out there every day. Look, I'm done with this metaphor. I gotta move on. All right. We have your chance to open the gates to T-Mobile Park on opening day. Do not go anywhere. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
It's 30 past the hour, which means it's time for us to open the gates on our phone lines and qualify another listener. Call 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776 in 1 minute if you're listening on the radio, or 30 seconds if you're listening on the stream. We'll take caller number... Caller number 4, who will be entered to win the grand prize of 2 tickets to opening day and the right to open the gates to welcome fans back to T-Mobile Park. Your next chance to win comes in 1 hour at 12:30. Again, that number, 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776. Joining us right now is Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, before we get to the conversation we were having about Jaren Reed, we had breaking NFL news this morning, also from the NFC West, though obviously not about Seattle, and it's that the 49ers now have the 3rd overall pick in the draft. Does that make you any more nervous about their standing in the NFC West over Seattle?
Well, they gave up quite a bit to get it, right? I mean, they're giving up a whole bunch of first-rounders now for the future. So, you know, the question is, how close do you think they are? Are they just a quarterback away? And even if that's true, you know, anyone they were to draft this year probably doesn't start to come into his own for another year or so after that. I think that they're putting themselves in a position to go for it. We've seen the Rams do this as well, where they cast aside their future first rounders in order to go after the folks at the very, very top of the draft. And it's been successful for them. I mean, like the Niners, they got to a Super Bowl and they've been able to sustain it to some degree. You know, as for whether or not that's a great long-term solution, I don't know. I think having first rounders most years tends to be a good thing, but you know, Seahawks find themselves in the same spot right now. Right? How are you feeling without going into this year with a first rounder, knowing that you know, you got Jamal Adams for that? You know, they're taking an even bigger risk because they're going after a rookie, and we know the hit rate on that can be kind of up and down.
It certainly can be up and down, but the hit rate that we know of very well, at least for last year and how it worked out, was Carlos Dunlap. How excited were you about the news that Carlos Dunlap was going to be returning?
Yeah, that was really great. And just the way that John Schneider, you know, saw the market, knew what it would be for a player like that, and was able to get his guy back at roughly half the price, just a little over half, 60%, something like that.
Yes.
That's really great GM work. And look, John's had he's come under a lot of criticism in the last year or so, and I think some of it is very fair, right? Trying to talk about what's happened with the draft and some of the mistakes that have been made in the draft that have led to some of the mistakes elsewhere and some of the more desperate decisions. Do you have to trade for Jamal Adams if you don't screw up some earlier picks? I think there's been some real fair criticism of John Schneider and what he's done in the draft since, I don't know, 2013 or so. That being said, this is what he does incredibly well. This may be John's best strength. Understanding the market, figuring out how to get his guys at a price that is beneficial. And you start looking at what they've done in the last few days with Hyder and now adding in Dunlap back to the mix and Benson Bayoa, and there may still be room for some other stuff. You know, this is at least reminiscent, not saying it's the same, but reminiscent of the offseason where you bring in both Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril because that's the way the market came to you. We all know the Seahawks need help getting to the quarterback. It was good, not great last year, not good at all at the beginning of the year, better by the end of the year. But how many times have we talked about the lack of turnovers they caused in that game against the Rams?
Right.
I think the hope here is that you're getting some guys who can change the course of the game by getting into the quarterback's lap and altering their ability to make plays and hopefully come up with some turnovers yourself. That may be equally, if not more important, to the protection Russell gets up front.
And another point to make on that is that your young core of guys that you want to see develop, but you don't necessarily want to rely on, guys like LJ Collier and Daryl Taylor, this takes a lot of pressure off of that pick, so to speak. Look, if Daryl Taylor comes in and he's a terror when he comes in on pass rushing situations, that's fantastic. That's an upgrade. But you're also not in a massive hole if he doesn't, you know, come together for you as well. So that's another reason why I love it. But the other side of this is you get this great news about Carlos Dunlap, and you see this really negative situation come with Jaron Reed. What did you make of that and how everything seemed to unfold as they tried to approach him in contract negotiations?
Yeah, and I've heard this story, right, that he was looking for more of a long-term commitment. They wanted to just kind of restructure. Jaron Reed has always been a tough one for me to put a finger on. I don't know about you. I really have gone all over the map on him. There are times where I've argued that he could be the most complete defensive tackle that we've seen, that maybe he played the run and pass overall better than even some of the greats just because of his ability to do both well. And there are other times where I just look at him and go, gosh, he just doesn't give you enough. Where's the pass rush that we saw the glimpse of a couple of years ago? Where's the ability to take over games that we see from the guys who are really great at this? And I don't just mean Aaron Donald, but the next group under that, right? I mean, I don't know that Jaron Reed consistently plays with that kind of a motor. So, yeah, I'm bummed to lose a guy that I think has been a really good player for them. Not sure I'm sold on him as a human, and especially coming on what happened a couple of years ago. It's anyone who's in that spot and the domestic violence charges, et cetera, it makes it really challenging for me, in fact, near impossible for me to really feel good about them on my team moving forward. But just looking at strictly at him on the field, I think he had a tremendous amount of upside and a lot of really great games. I think that maybe that consistent high motor wasn't always where you'd want it to be.
Curtis Rogers asked us about 10 minutes ago if we could assign a grade to Seahawks free agency so far. What grade would we give them? Jake gave them a B. I gave them like an A-A. What grade would you give?
I'm still probably in the B plus at the most range, you know, maybe even a B minus, depending on how a few of these things go. I think they've done well. I don't know that they've done great. This isn't a C kind of D performance where they're not even close, but you know, I guess maybe I'm still having difficulty with some of the moves that even from the last couple of years, and I'm struggling to separate them out from this one. Mm-hmm. But where are the difference makers? Where are the guys that are going to take you from good to great? Yeah, I think they've made good signings. I like Gerald Everett. That's fine. Gabe Jackson seems like he's going to be good. And I'm certainly happy to have Carlos Dunlap back at a better price. But how are you getting much better? Like a lot better. Yeah, Hyder's good. Let's see. Hopefully he can play a Michael Bennett role. But were you that one player away on either side of the line of scrimmage, especially if you're losing Jaron Reed as a part of it? I don't know. It feels like there's more that needs to be done. I like the Chris Carson signing. There's a bunch of them I like. But I'm having a hard time going above maybe more than a B because where's what Russell called for last year? Where are the superstars? Where are the people that are going to put you over the top and get you back into a Super Bowl? That's the goal. And I'm not sure I'm sold that they're there yet.
All right. He is Mike Salk. You can hear him every day. I know. I'm winging it. You can hear him every weekday at 11:30 right here on Jake and Stacey.
I'm psyched. Have a great weekend.
Bye, Mike. All right. We are going to bring on our winner. Tom Nkitatas was entered into the Open the Gates contest, one of three that are being entered into the contest for this hour. Tom, first of all, congrats. Best of luck. And secondly, tell us why you deserve to win those tickets and the chance to open the gates to T-Mobile Park.
Awesome. It's not necessarily for me, and I don't want to throw a stop story at y'all because I know that you probably heard a few, but my father-in-law just retired after 40 years of teaching. He bought himself an RV, drove down to spring training 2 weeks ago. He got there right the day before spring training was starting, and a member of his immediate family passed away, so he had to turn his RV around, drive all the way back to Washington. He's never been to spring training before, and his plan was to go down there and enjoy it, and it just didn't happen. He's never been to a Mariner game at the T-Mobile there, and I just wanted to maybe pay it forward to him and say, hey, this is what I want to do for you, bud, for for all everything he's done for the kids in the school districts, and just because he got torn away from one of his bucket list dreams.
Tom, why are you making me so emotional on a Friday?
Tom, that would be an incredible moment for you and your family to be able to enjoy that moment and to be able to welcome everybody else in. That would be a fantastic moment. I'm rooting for you guys. Congratulations being entered into the drawing.
Definitely.
Thanks for calling in. We're super fired up for you.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. All right. We have some major trade news in the NFL directly affecting the NFC West. 49ers going to shake things up with the number 3 overall pick. Jake is going to tell us which quarterback they should or could take and which would make him the most nervous. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
We did have breaking news earlier this morning. Curtis!
I don't have it ready. You said that two seconds before.
Breaking news. It's not that breaking, but it did happen. So this from ESPN's Adam Schefter. The Dolphins traded the number 3 overall pick to the San Francisco 49ers. 49ers trade up from 12. They had to throw in a 2021 third round pick and first round picks in both 2022 and 2023. There is no other person they're taking here than a quarterback. Like, this is where they're getting their quarterback
yes.
of the future. Jake, who's going to be available? Maybe. You obviously don't know for sure, but
right.
who do they have a shot at? Who makes you the most nervous? What names are Seahawks fans watching for? Because this shakes up the NFC West for years to come.
Well, the one that makes me the most nervous is Zach Wilson, and he's definitely a possibility there. I think the Jets are going to end up taking Zach Wilson. The next guy on the board, in my mind, would be Trey Lance. And so I think that Trey Lance definitely fits in there. And with that system, with Kyle Shanahan, I think it could be very dynamic and unique. But obviously, Justin Fields, Mac Jones. Mac Jones was a name that was thrown out there quite a bit with Kyle Shanahan when he was at the number 12 pick overall. And the reason for that being is that he had one of the most successful offenses in the NFL with a quarterback that was a pocket passer like Matt Ryan. And so if you're comparing Mac Jones to Matt Ryan, that would make sense. I just don't see the same physical traits in terms of the same level of passing ability that Matt Ryan had coming out of college as Mac Jones has or does not have. I think Mac Jones could be a very good player in this league. I think he can be a good quarterback in this league. I just don't think he's on Matt Ryan's level, but it would make sense. So to me, the difference maker that they can land and that they can get is either Zach Wilson or Trey Lance. In my opinion, it's one of those two guys.
Okay, so which of those two guys then makes you more nervous? Does one make you more nervous than the other?
Not necessarily. I think Zach Wilson at this stage, I think, can make all the throws. I'm really, really impressed by him. I'm a big, big fan. But Trey Lance as well is one of those guys that can make off-platform throws. He's worked within the pocket. There's a lot to like there with Trey Lance. And so either one of those guys I think would be a home run get for the 49ers, you know, given the fact that Kyle Shanahan is an offensive-minded head coach. He has been very successful in his career on the offensive side of the ball and knowing how to develop quarterbacks. So I'm very optimistic about, you know, if you're talking about it from a 49er perspective, optimistic or expect whoever they select with Zach Wilson or Trey Lance that they'll be able to make it work and make it happen. And it's funny because immediately when you do that, you go, okay, what happens to Jimmy Garoppolo, Stacey? We kind of got two conflicting reports here from the ESPN insiders. We've got Jeremy Fowler on one end saying that 49ers didn't seem interested in trading Jimmy G earlier. That could change. Adam Schefter tweets out that from a source that he texted, the reply was, Jimmy is our guy. Are you buying that?
You got to read it verbatim because the text actually said, Jimmy is here to stay, period. He's our guy this year.
He's our guy this year.
This year.
I'm not buying that. When you select a quarterback with the third pick, it puts a fast track on everything that is going on. And I'm sorry, but Jimmy Garoppolo hasn't done anything in this league that warrants the idea that he doesn't need to have a quarterback battle this year. If Zach Wilson or Trey Lance shows up in training camp and they're the guy, there's not really a big steep learning curve for them, and they're ready to go, why on earth would you hold them back a year just to, you know, have Jimmy G play the mentor role or play the stopgap year? That doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. So they can text that to Schefter all they want. I don't think that's going to be the case. I'm not sold on that whatsoever.
No, I think that that's a way to potentially recoup as much as you can in a trade. The idea that, well, we don't have to trade him to you, so you better give us a deal we like because we're fine keeping him, right? That's what makes the Jaron Reed situation so tricky is Seattle's got to find a trade partner, but then also a trade partner that's willing to give up a draft pick knowing that they can potentially pay less for Reed because the Seahawks are going to have to release him anyways. Like, that's when teams don't like having that leverage, when a player makes it clear he's on the outs. So you want to make it clear to your player. I mean, it's kind of cutthroat, but you want to at all times make it seem like, well, you want this guy here.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think everyone on the outside looking in is like, guys, guys, you don't leverage your future it's like the Seahawks trading for Jamal Adams and then being like, I don't know, we got a battle. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be, he's going to have to compete for a starting spot. Like, sure, in theory, but no, you don't trade two first round picks and then some to move up to number three and take a quarterback that you're going to be like, oh, we'll let him learn for a couple years.
Right. He's not sitting behind Brett Favre or Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson or any of these other guys. We're talking about Jimmy Garoppolo.
Well, and you're talking about a team that's in a Super Bowl window still. I think, I don't want to say people forget how good they are. Everyone knows how good the 49ers are when they're healthy. They are a team, and we had Nick Wagner of ESPN on. They are a team that this season, their goal is Super Bowl. They're coming back, and they're going to get their all-pros healthy and their Pro Bowlers healthy, and they're going to have that defense back with their guys. And they managed to retain some of their top free agents. Like, they very much are looking at a Super Bowl. So if Jimmy G underperforms and they really think they have the right fit with Zach Wilson or whoever else is there for them, you're telling me they don't go to him? That they don't say, well, if he's going to help us win, we're going to go to him because we're getting to the Super Bowl. We're getting this ring.
I mean, I think that that's a big part of the equation. Now, the next part is, are you afraid of the 49ers if they were to get Trey Lance, if they were to get Zach Wilson? This year, I don't think so. I think that they'll be a good team. I think that they'll be a very tough out. But if they're starting a rookie quarterback, Stacey, I'm not going to be overly concerned about the 49ers and what they're going to do this year. I think it would be a move to not take a step back from what they were a year ago by any stretch, but I think that it would be, hey, we're willing to miss the playoffs this year. We're willing to not be a Super Bowl contender this year in particular for the developmental aspect of this guy who can be special in year two, year three, year four, and year five, right? That's the long game that you play if you're the 49ers and when you take this kind of approach. So if that's going to be truly the case, I think that that really stands out to me with the Seahawks, is they've got another opportunity to really try and capitalize on another year where they are the clear front runners in this. The Rams are a team that are going to be very, very competitive, and they're going to make it very difficult. And I think it's the Seahawks and the Rams who are the front runners to win the division this year. But I think it would only solidify my feeling on that, because every rookie quarterback is going to go through their ups and downs in year one.
I don't know, man. I am convinced that the NFC West, once again, I know that you didn't not say this, but that the NFC West, once again, is going to be the best and toughest division in all of football. And maybe it's the big names, despite their ages, despite the fact that their productivity is maybe a year or two in the rearview mirror, but the big names the Cardinals have signed to their team, I truly, like, I'm not entirely sure where the Seahawks stand. The one advantage they have right now is they've got the best quarterback, and that's the most important piece. But I'm not feeling confident at all. I mean, we got to see how all this shakes out. This is, once again, going to be the toughest division in football.
It is.
I'm convinced of it.
I'm feeling confident right now. I'm feeling confident with what they've been able to do to bring back Chris Carson, to be able to relatively keep your offense the same.
I'm confident Seattle
can compete. No, they absolutely can compete, and I think that they are I think they're the front runner. I think they're the most stable. Once again, they're the most stable franchise within the division at a very highly competitive level. You have really done a good job of solidifying your pass rush this offseason. They'll make another choice on what they're going to do to replace Jaron Reed if he actually does not come back. I think there's multiple moves for the Seahawks to continue to keep adding and bolstering and strengthening their roster. And so I think that they're in a very, very good position to be in the driver's seat. Whereas you see the Rams, you see the 49ers. What are they doing, Stacey? They're making dramatic moves. They're making dramatic moves to try and keep up, and also to try and get them over the hump from where the Seahawks are. And so if I'm a Seahawks fan, I feel pretty good about that, because you're making steady moves and not desperate moves to continue to keep yourself on top where everybody else is trying to play catch-up.
Although the Rams did make an effort via trade to mend things between Jared Goff and Michael Brockers. I thought that was special.
Yes, that was very nice of them.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners take on the Padres at 6:40 p.m. today on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Let's keep this conversation going with Michael Bumpus. He joins us next.